May we have the roll call?
Councilmember Deedy? And she's excused, Mayor. Councilmember Deedy is excused. Councilmember Morgan?
Here.
Councilmember Edelman?
Here.
Councilmember Weber?
Here.
Councilmember Taylor?
Here.
Okay, we have an oath of office for the mayor and Brian Weber.
Yep, Jamie's got all that stuff. We're ready to go with that. I'll put this stuff on here. You can come around and take pictures. Here we go again. I, Brian Weber.
I, Carol Benson.
I, Carol Benson.
Having been duly elected.
Having been duly elected.
To the office of.
To the office of.
The city of Black Diamond.
The city of Black Diamond.
Council position number four.
Council position number four.
Mayor.
Mayor.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
Do solemnly swear or affirm. That I will faithfully and impartially.
That I will faithfully and impartially.
Discharge the duties of this office.
Discharge the duties of this office.
As prescribed by law.
As prescribed by law.
And to the best of my ability.
And to the best of my ability.
And that I will support. And maintain.
And maintain.
The Constitution of the State of Washington.
The Constitution of the State of Washington.
And of the United States of America.
And of the United States of America.
Yep, you're done. You can. Yep.
Yes, there's more open seats.
Taylor, thank you.
Yeah, I think we've seen it before.
So now we are going to swear in our new commander, Martinez. He was actually sponsored by Commander Goro, that's no longer with us, but he came from the same part of the country, and he has been a really good asset to our community, and let's go help serve the community center, and is involved with the citizens, and I really would like to congratulate him for accepting this position.
Technology and I don't get along. If you guys don't know Brian, or for those of you that aren't really familiar with Sergeant Martinez, I'll just tell you a little bit. Brian's only been with us a couple years, but I can tell you if there's one person that I never have to worry about decision-making or being a man of character, it's Brian. You never have to worry about what he stands for or what he's about. We're very honored and we're very blessed to have him. And just a huge congratulations, Brian.
Appointed to the position of police commander.
To the city of Black Diamond, Washington.
job that he started. And I just appreciate all the support from the city that I've received, from my chief, from the mayor, the city council, all the great citizens that we serve, Mama being one of them. Just want to thank you for all that. My wife, for kind of giving me the push to move out here, my kids leaving their good friends in Albuquerque to, you know, so moving to Washington. They've been my backbone and support through it all. So want to thank you for that. And, you know, just like in my oath that I just took, you know, I promise to finish the job with a great start and do it in the best way I can possible. So just thank you for that.
We have a presentation from Reagan Dunn from King County Council on the state of the county.
Thank you, Madam Mayor and council members. Good to be here in Black Diamond again. And Commander, congratulations as you leave for your service and you're taking over big shoes, and we wish you the very best. See you, Mama. Just wanted to come by. It's also exciting to see the swearing in. As you know, public service is a public trust, and we may not all agree on the substance of the issues, but making sure that we protect and take care of our community and honor our laws is always an exciting thing, any jurisdiction across the country. I just wanted to come and give an update on what's happening with King County. There's a lot going on there, and I think it helps with the interface between cities and the county and unincorporated areas and the municipalities to provide, as best I can, an annual update of what's going on to all of the 8 cities that I represent. First, I wanted to start out with the county budget update. And currently, the county is in the middle of a $9 billion budget adopted back in November 2014. And we are about the 13th largest county in the country, over 2 million people. We have about 13,000 employees that work for King County government. The general fund is looking at a deficit for the next biennium of a big $48 million, so it's serious. And public health funds remain in trouble. Services such as primary care and outreach, connecting people to Medicaid and other resources, are at risk of cuts. The good news is that in spite of some fiscal challenges facing the general fund, the council did prioritize over 1,000 hours of traffic enforcement in the sheriff's budget over the rest of the biennium and adding about 200,000 to, and this is important, test the backlog of previously untested rape kits. So these additions are going to allow for safer roads and justice on behalf of victims of rape. So there are some bright spots. Another piece of good news for Black Diamond relates to the Enumclaw Health Clinic. Together with my colleagues on the council and with the collaboration and support of the Black Diamond City Council, we generated enough funding to continue services at the vital Enumclaw Health Clinic through the current biennium. And thank you for your financial contribution to keep that clinic open. The Enumclaw Clinic, as you know, is a satellite office of the Auburn Health Center, which was closed as part of the executive's budget last go-around, and we were able to turn that around and, in fact, keep it open. So maintaining health care services at the clinic was, of course, one of my top priorities. Appreciate the support of the city. If the clinic in Enumclaw had closed, over 1,700 individuals who utilized that clinic last year would have had to travel a lot farther to receive the services, including many right here in Black Diamond. So that's a victory. Another victory is in the area of the King County Fair. While it's down in Enumclaw, $60,000 was included in the budget for the King County Fair to keep it open. As you know, it's the longest running fair west of the Mississippi. In addition to these funds, the council also approved a budget proviso, which I sponsored, which provides $25,000 every year of continuing funding for the fair, which is good, a stable, reliable source of funding for them moving forward. And because of a lot of this work and folks in the community, we were able to double attendance at King County Fair this summer over that of the last year, and we hope that it snowballs and builds momentum. We appreciate that the city's continued support of our agricultural and our rural heritage in this part of the county and across the county. Talk briefly about the Ravensdale mining disaster. Mayor Benson was there. Councilmember Edelman was there, or Tammy was there as well. Tammy was there. Appreciate that. And just a little history there. Many of you may know this. November 16th, 1915, 100 years ago, last month, 31 miners died in a mining explosion down up the hill here in Ravensdale. It was one of the worst mining disasters in Washington State history. And it actually was so bad that that town, which was incorporated, no longer stayed incorporated and sort of disappeared for a period of time. We were able to hold a ceremony for the 100th anniversary and put a monument in place and an interpretive trail there. Father Dave Rogerson, the pastor at St. Barbara's Parish here, assisted in naming each of the deceased, and Father Dave's attendants as well as residents from here in Black Diamond illustrate the long shared history between Ravensdale and Black Diamond. I think it was an important historical marker in the county. Let me talk a little bit more about what's happening in the transit arena. Many communities across King County are dependent on Metro Transit, and it's heavily integrated in their city. Black Diamond, while transit's important to some of the riders here, isn't as focused as it could. And so for me, it's a constant fight to make sure that service continues to be present as a lifeline to various communities throughout Southeast King County. So later tonight, we're going to hear from Daniel Rowe and Ann Breslin from King County Metro, who are going to be speaking about the alternative service plan for Southeast King County, including Black Diamond, and it's exciting to see it in development. Starting back in 2008, King County Metro faced a very serious hardship due to the Great Recession, as did many local governments. And the county worked hard to find savings, and we formed a regional task force to advise us. That task force suggested a lot of efficiencies and alternatives, and I chaired it. And we came up with alternative service demonstration programs. And in 2015, 2016, the budget includes $12 million now for alternative services over the two-year period. And I really appreciate Metro's efforts in trying to make this achieve a better connectivity for the people of Black Diamond. And you'll get the updates on specific routes as well. Shifting gears to committee assignments, this year I've chaired the King County Flood Control District, continue to chair the Regional Transit Committee, which has policy oversight over Metro, working on the Government Accountability and Oversight Committee as well. So talking briefly about the Flood District, because that's an important unit of government. It's a special purpose government, and it is something that we're proud of. You have six clean audits by the state. If you look across the country, since its inception 7 years ago, we've had six audits. They've all been clean. Our overhead to capital input ratio is one of the best. In fact, there's no one better in the country for large projects. We get very little overhead, more on the ground, $250 million in infrastructure improvements to protect flooding, so lives, homes, businesses, property are protected, and we continue that work. The city of Black Diamond will be awarded a flood control grant that helps rebuild aging infrastructure. The $145,000 grant will help to allow Black Diamond to replace three corrugated metal culverts along Lake Sawyer Road at Covington Creek and Black Diamond that need to be replaced. And several years ago, I took a short tour of a section of water supply line that was replaced as part of the project, funded by my mom, who got money from Congress, as a matter of fact, when she represented this area years ago, Jennifer Dunn. And she actually was able to bring $240,000 to improve the city's water, removing portion of an old 1945 asbestos water main. Anyway, so that's something that has been fun to continue to try and make improvements relating to water infrastructure. So there's going to be significant grants coming to the city. Currently, stormwater from State Route 169 and local commercial areas untreated and discharged directly into Guinder Creek. And that's a major tributary creek to Lake Sawyer. And so the city of Black Diamond applied for a King County Waterworks grant, proposing to collect the untreated stormwater by installing approximately 2,800 feet of a new stormwater pipe. When I learned about this, I made sure the city of Black Diamond was aware, and I'm committed to doing what I can to make sure this application is competitive during the council's grant-making decision. So there's a lot of work we'll continue on. If you need help with anything or any information relating to the interface between the county and city needs, I'm always there and available. I just wanted to give a nod to Ron Taylor for your years of service here on the city council. thank you for your leadership and wish you well as you enjoy not being in elected office for a while. And so if the mayor will permit, I'm happy to take any questions you might have.
Does anybody have any questions?
I just have a comment, because I always have a comment. I just want to thank you, because without grants from King County and the state and others, we don't survive. And as a resident of Lake Sawyer, I appreciate that those culverts are going to be replaced, and I think those folks that are down on Covington Creek are going to appreciate maybe some of their flooding levels will abate a little bit if it quit raining. But you know, I really do appreciate everything that you're doing to help us out.
Thank you very much. I do consider it part of my job to make sure that we're bringing dollars back to this community, because if it's not going here, it's going to Burien or SeaTac or Seattle or somewhere else. And so we need to be fighting constantly to find those pockets of money that can help augment your general fund and special public works needs as well. Thank you.
Well, and I think the fact that you actually called the city and said, hey, we might have some money here to work on it. So I think that's very nice.
Thank you, council member.
Do we have any comments by anybody in the audience? Does anybody have any comments for Reagan Dunn? Well, thank you so much for being here tonight. It's been really good working with you.
Thank you so much, Mayor Benson. Have a good meeting.
So our next item on the agenda is the South King County Alternative Services Project with Daniel Rowe and Ann Brusklin.
Well, and Ann can sit up there too.
Can just move a chair over. For a minute.
Our technical expert will take care of that.
Second time I learned. Thank
like we're in business. Sorry for the delay there. And good evening, everyone. My name is Daniel Rowe. I work for King County Metro. I'm a transportation planner there. And I am the project manager for the Southeast King County Alternative Services Project. I'm here with my colleague, Ann Brusklin. And what we wanted to do today is give you an update on our project. We've been working with the communities in Southeast King County for since about March, and we've done a lot of great work, talked to a lot of customers, a lot of stakeholders in the region, and we think we have a good proposal for improving mobility here in the area. We're going to really be talking about two separate things today, one of which is a new proposal for how we might tweak some of the bus services in the area, and the other is a new service that Metro's offering. Called Community Van, that we think might be a good fit in this area, and Ann's going to be discussing that Community Van service with you. So Real quick, just to give you a background on the Alternative Services Program, as Councilmember Dunn noted, this is a came from the council in 2013. There was a five-year implementation plan adopted, and then subsequently a budget established for the program. And in that five-year implementation plan, Southeast King County was identified as one of our priority implementation areas. And the intent of this plan was to bring service to parts of the county that lacked the land use and infrastructure and density that, would typically support a fixed route service. So it's really about right-sizing and thinking about the context of a particular area within King County and making sure the service we're providing meets the needs and is appropriate for the given that context. We were guided to, in the plan, to use a community-based approach, meaning to work with the local cities, work with interested organizations and stakeholders to make sure we were hearing from the right voices and making sure we were developing something that was appropriate. So if you see here on the map, it's a little small, but basically our project area really covered the two corridors, one, the first being Renton to Enumclaw, and the second being Auburn to Enumclaw. And then as you can see on the map, the project area kind of spans a little bit wider to include the city of Covington and some of the unincorporated King County areas. And the approach we took was to really identify the mobility needs. We did a lot of listening and asking what customers thought of the service, trying to find people that weren't transit customers and understanding why maybe they're not customers or what we could do to provide a greater mobility for them. Then we were looking at, we developed a number of different options that we could implement here in Southeast, and we discussed those. We went back to the community and asked what they thought about those, and then finally selected a recommendation. So we used a number of different tactics to talk to folks here in this area. Like I said, the first step was to develop a working group. We had representation from all the cities in addition to some of the school districts and some of the service providers, the nonprofit service providers. We also talked to a lot of our transit customers through route subscription alerts. We rode the buses. We went to community events and talked to folks face-to-face. We used social media and the traditional online survey and public meetings. So, and like I said, the first phase of the project was really to do a lot of listening. And what did we hear? So the first thing we heard was, in general, there was general satisfaction with the existing service we were providing. But after that, the folks had a lot to say. First of all, there was a lack, folks felt there was a lack of evening and weekend service. A lot of the services that we have are, you know, kind of 8 to 5, and then they drop off, and there's no, once you're outside of those service hours, there's not any options to get around. Reliability was an issue. I think given the length of some of these routes, they tend to get caught in traffic, and they're late, or they miss a trip, so that's a real strain on some of these riders, especially those that are transit dependent when their bus doesn't show up. Lack of parking was a barrier for some of the commuters. There was interest in some connections outside of the King County lines, including the city of Buckley. We did find very little transit use between Black Diamond and Enumclaw, and remember that point because that's a part of input that we developed a service change with. And then finally, there was a few route deviations. So during the midday, we operate something called DART service, and that is a service that has areas along its route that it's able to deviate from. You can call ahead, and you can get it to pick you up or drop you off the route. Again, there's these areas that are identified. So although that is a nice service and it is a nice option for folks here, in particular, there was very few deviations being requested in Enumclaw and Renton. So that kind of gives you a flavor of the feedback we heard in our phase one. So given all this feedback and our conversations with the working group, we developed a number of different ideas that we thought could improve mobility here under this alternative services program. one of which was a slight change of the transit service, and I'll go into that in a little bit more detail in a second. The other is a new concept we call emergency ride home. This is, we heard that a lot of riders, because that service stopped in the evening, if they missed the last bus going to Enumclaw or coming down to Black Diamond here, they were stranded. And some of those riders that didn't have a lifeline, they couldn't afford a taxi or they couldn't call a family member, they were really just stuck. So we tried to think of a way to maybe get them that emergency ride home by partnering with cab companies and offering them the option to call for a ride if they missed their last trip. Ride sharing, we have a really large ride share program. Some of you might have heard of our van pool program. So this is, I think, especially relevant in areas of the county where there's not a robust network of transit service on every other street. This is a little more flexible way for commuters to get where they need to go using some of our van products. So we have a couple ideas about ways to improve ride sharing here. And then finally, local mobility connections. This is kind of a response to the Southeast Regional Shuttle, which was operated by the Greater Maple Valley Community Center, and it was a service that provided trips for the general public. They could get call and reserve a ride, and it would serve this general area, mainly funded by Washington State Department of Transportation grant funds. And unfortunately, the grant funds were cut last year, and the service had to be discontinued. So we talked to a lot of riders who missed that service. So we tried to come up with an idea about how we could not replace it, but provide something similar. And that's the community van concept that Ann will talk about when I'm finished with my portion. So that's what we proposed. And then, like I said, we brought this all back to the community. And we got folks' feelings on these different ideas that we had. And here's this is what we essentially proposed. Now, this is where I can talk a little more detail about the transit service change that we're proposing. So to give you a lay of the land, there's a DART route 907 today that operates between Renton and Enumclaw. It runs during the day, and it operates every 90 minutes. There's also a DART service that runs between Auburn and Enumclaw, the 915, also operates every 90 minutes. And remember, these DART routes have small little areas where it can deviate if a customer calls ahead and requests that. So what we found and what we heard was that there was on this 907 route that goes from Renton down to Enumclaw, the segment between Black Diamond and Enumclaw, we found very little use. About one person was riding the DART vehicle per trip. So compared to the rest of the services that we operate, that was on the lower end of the performance. Given on average one rider per trip, we talked to a lot of those riders, and a lot of those riders were coming from Enumclaw, and they were riding all the way to Renton, and they were transferring to another bus to go to points further, like Kent or Seattle or Renton, or further parts into Renton. The reason, before I go there, there's actually a faster trip for them if they actually go through Auburn and transfer to a Sound Transit service. It would be faster for them to do that. But you have to, if you don't have an Orca card and you're paying cash, you have to pay twice. You can the Sound Transit service won't honor Metro's ticket, the transfer. So those riders, wanting to save some money, were willing to take more time to stay on a Metro route and go take a longer route and continue and stay on Metro service. So what we thought there was a proposal that we could come up with, which is essentially has a few different phases to it. We would take the route 907 and shorten it to end here in Black Diamond. So remember, today it goes all the way down to Enumclaw. We would shorten that to end in Black Diamond. We would reinvest those hours and put those into the route 915 that goes between Auburn and Enumclaw. That corridor is identified in our service guidelines as an underserved corridor, basically meaning there's more transit demand on that corridor than we currently have in terms of the service provision. So basically, the savings that we achieve from shortening the route here in Black Diamond gets that 915 service up to every 60 minutes, and when it would take it off the list of underserved, it would give it that appropriate service level given our service guidelines. With the package, we would also add a late evening trip to between Renton and Black Diamond. That was something we heard loud and clear, was those late lack of late evening trips were really, really tough on a commuter, especially those commuters coming from Seattle. They really have to start their journey earlier in the evening to make sure they get that last trip. So this package would add a late evening trip onto it's actually the 143 in the evenings, mornings and evenings. It's a 143. It's a bigger bus. So it would be essentially a later one additional 143 trip. To complement this program, we would also include a very heavy outreach and education and ORCA distribution program. Again, considering the fact that we are investing the service into that Enumclaw to Auburn corridor, we want those customers to be able to take advantage of those shorter trips, those shorter travel times, but we got to get those ORCA cards in their hand, make sure the folks know how to use them, and then they can transfer without having to pay twice onto that Sound Transit service. What am I missing? I think that's about all of the transit. Sorry, one key detail. So when you shorten a 907 service to end in Black Diamond, what the reason we can achieve so much savings by doing that is we can do the whole loop with one van instead of the two that it uses today. The only problem with that is we can only run it every 100 minutes. Okay, so today it runs every 90 minutes. You get a trip every 90 minutes. And if this proposal was adopted, it would be running every 100 minutes. Okay, so that's essentially Route 907 Option C. We had a number of different options that we put in front of the community. Some were status quo, don't change anything, keep what we have, and it ranged to this option, which is a little more of a shakeup. And both the customers and the working group and the communities we worked with, they preferred this option C. So this is what's proposed. It hasn't been adopted by council yet, but this is what the process essentially came up with. And again, we also want to push forward that emergency ride home program. So we want to give transit riders a kind of a lifeline. If they miss their last bus, we want to give them a phone number they can call up, and they can get a taxi ride home. Metro would cover that cost through the alternative services program. They would not have to pay for that taxi. The community van program, I'm going to spare you the details. That's what Ann will discuss. And then the rideshare promotions, that's mainly utilizing a lot of the existing services we have, but really doing direct outreach, working with cities like yours and others in the area, and trying to grow the use of ride sharing in the area, make sure customers are at least aware of it, and then taking advantage of it. So, a little bit about implementation. So, in one thing we've already done, which is in September of 2015, we added a new Route 186 trip. That's the morning and afternoon, the peak variant that goes from Auburn to Enumclaw. We've already added that new trip. In March 2016, the council approved the service in investment in the 915. So this essentially, remember that package I described? Phase one is we would use alternative services budget to get that Route 915 up to 60-minute service. And phase two, which is again, pending council approval, it would happen in September 2016. That's when we would shorten the route 907 to end in Black Diamond. Now, an important component of that package is the gap closure that we would create between Black Diamond and Enumclaw. We don't like to create gaps in our network. So what we would also use is a new approach to make sure that the riders that are really dependent on that transit service, the transit-dependent riders, would have a connection. We think it would operate similar to the DART style, the deviation, where you can call ahead. We would partner with a local organization that already operates in the area and already has vans and already has a distribution set up. We would allow customers to call ahead, request a ride, and they would be picked up by maybe that's probably a smaller vehicle, maybe like a passenger van, and they would be transported between Enumclaw and Black Diamond. So we're not going to leave those customers high and dry. we're just going to, again, think about the theme of this alternative service is make sure that service is right-sized. So we think by shortening the DARTS service to Black Diamond, the gap will still be met by this alternative service function. Okay. So basically what we want to do today is get in front of you. We've already talked to the city of Enumclaw, and we're talking to each council. We want to, before we go and push this forward to the council for their consideration, the King County Council, we want to be checking in with you, making sure you had, making sure, if you had any questions, we could answer them now. If you see any red flags, let us know. This is kind of one of our last step. We, again, remember, we've already worked with the community, worked with our staff level at all the cities, and got this proposal developed, and this is our check-in point. So I think at this stage, I guess I would take a quick question on this, unless you wanted to wait until the end after you hear the community thing.
Councilmember Edelman.
I just have a quick question, because one of the things that we ran into a few years ago was the way that Metro was counting their trips. Mm-hmm. In the mornings, they were running empty buses to Enumclaw, but then they were running full on the commute hours back into Renton, opposite in the afternoon. And that was one trip. That wasn't two trips. So we were getting, was it two trips? We were getting dinged when they were running empty buses to Enumclaw in the morning or empty buses home to the bus barn in the evening. Right. Is that same kind of a metric going to be enforce now, or are you going to change how you're counting bus runs?
No, we're not going to change anything. And remember, this is what we're really talking about is midday service here.
Okay.
So what you bring up is a classic dilemma of commuter service,
right,
where it's a one-way travel demand.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get great use going the direction everyone's going, and then you got to get the bus back. It's always going to be empty. That's just a dilemma we'll always face with commuter service, especially when you have kind of
But what was happening is we were getting dinged because people leave town to go to work.
Right. So, yeah, this wouldn't apply.
This is
a midday service. It's generally not commuter-focused. It's generally folks going, either maybe they start work later or they're going for a medical appointment, they're going to visit friends, going shopping. It's a bit of a different service that we're talking about here.
But you're still going to have some kind of metric to follow the ridership and...
So you would still follow our service guidelines, but again, you're not going to be subject to
the
commuter focus.
Okay.
Anybody else have a question?
Okay. Well, I can continue to drive, and I do have one more slide just to talk about the next steps. So if this option C, this change that we're proposing, is something that you're okay with, what we would do is we would look for a local partner to provide that gap closure type service, that kind of reservation type service. We would look to partner with that organization to make sure that's in place before we would ever shorten that route. And then we would, assuming we have that partner in place, then we would develop an ordinance package for the King County Council's consideration. That process starts for us about in January, and it makes a real slow way out to the council. And again, this, if approved, this would be September 2016 that it would go into place. And also, we would be developing the programs to get the ORCA cards out there, get information out there, and develop some of these other supplemental services that we proposed.
Daniel said is Ann Brusland, and I'm a transportation planner with our rideshare service section of King County. As part of our working group engagement, one of the gaps that was identified was the loss of the Southeast regional band that Daniel mentioned. To address the gap, we worked with the working group about this new alternative service product called Community Van Program. While this is a new program, it is advised by King County Rideshare's experience with the Community Access Transportation Program, the van pool program, which is the largest publicly owned van pool program in the nation, and our rideshare services that we currently provide in King County. So although this is a new product, it is based on a lot of experience on other products that have been successful in the We dedicated three of our working group meetings to discuss the elements of the community van program and how it might provide a flexible transportation option in the area to meet local needs in a customized manner. So the working group were supportive of exploring this concept further and asked us to present the program elements to you and the other cities in order to gauge your interest in our moving forward with this concept. The community van program was designed to provide a flexible transportation option where fixed bus route and local shuttle services are not well suited to fill the gaps. The program is designed to be provided in partnership with the local community and is comprised of several elements, physical and web-based location for residents to get information in the community, community vans, which would be provided by King County, a transportation coordinator that would help coordinate and promote the services in the communities, and a marketing component to make folks aware of these new services that we're covering. So the next few slides on this are really just to talk about each of these elements in detail. So the community van would, the concept is to provide group trips. So this is a ride share service. This isn't a demand service, a one-off like a taxi cab service, but group trips that could be provided in the community to popular destinations identified by the community. So you would set the priorities of how this community van resource would be used in your community. The van is driven by volunteer drivers recruited out of the community. This is similar to what we do in our current van pool program and in some of our community access transportation programs that we have. The drivers would be screened by King County and would meet the requirements like we currently require for our van pool program. So we would vet the drivers and make sure that they have driving records and are folks that we're comfortable with having behind the wheel and helping to serve the community. The trips would be promoted through a website and through our rideshare software that we have available on the web. Riders would request to join these trips that are prearranged and in the system, promoted through the system, and be picked up at prearranged stops that are defined for each of the trips. And we will be bringing accessible vans to the community to help support trips where an individual is in a wheelchair and needs that kind of transportation. So these are accessible services that we're providing. So next slide. The community hub is actually a term we use because it's faster than saying we want to provide a one-stop shop for folks for transportation services via the web, a physical kiosk or location where people can get brochures, a phone number that folks can call or an individual they can talk to. So the hub really is all of those concepts, and people pick the concept or the venue that is best for them to get the information they need, and all of these resources will have the information available of transportation services that are available in your local community. In addition, these hubs would provide information regarding these community van trips that are being offered and how folks in the community could participate in the community van program, either as a driver or as a passenger on one of the prearranged trips. And additionally, it's a venue where folks can find out what other transportation news is going on in the community. Is there a road that's down? Is there an event that's coming up where you have a high concentration of people going to an area where you don't have a lot of parking and you want to encourage people to ride share or use the community van to get into those programs? Those are the type of services that can be promoted through this community hub, as well as the bus service that's available, how to leverage ORCA and use ORCA to pay fare for metro services, and other community transportation services that may be available in your community that we can promote through this, these same locations for folks. So next slide. We are planning to help facilitate and coordinate these efforts to hire a transportation coordinator. This would start out as a part-time person who would help promote the transportation services. They would help in the community to recruit volunteer drivers to drive the vans. They would work with the local community to promote, organize, and coordinate the trips. They also would handle the care and feeding of our vans, the van maintenance, et cetera. They would help to maintain the community van content, at least at a residential level or at a community level, of what information is important for you to have on that hub to provide and make available to the residents in Black Diamond or in Southeast King County. We also would lean on them. We talked earlier about the metrics related to the bus. Of course, we're going to want to capture metrics on the utilization of this service to make sure that we're using it right and what trips are being productive and what trips aren't, so that we can continue to fine-tune and tailor the service as we develop it in the community. So we'll want to be capturing metrics around that. So we'll rely on this transportation coordinator to assist us with those efforts. So we do contemplate that this is a partnership with the local communities. We are not the subject matter experts on what your travel needs are in Southeast King County. These are, as Daniel said, are for your midday trips, your evening trips, your weekend trips. We heard a lot about that the current bus service really isn't serving those well, or it is primarily focusing on two corridors, and there are trips beyond those two corridors where folks want to get to, and our current services are not supporting that very well. So these vans are very flexible and can be used to take those kind of trips in your community and coordinate those trips. So it is a partnership. We're looking to you to help us to define what those are. So what I wanted to walk through quickly is for each of these elements, kind of what the county's responsibility is and what we're going to look to the partners to help us with. So for the hub concept that we talked about, the web or the physical location, we will provide the physical kiosks and marketing materials. We will develop marketing materials. We will print the marketing materials and provide them and make them available for the programs. We will provide all the program content on county-maintained web pages, the Southeast King County hub. We can talk about whether or not we need one specific to each of the cities, or if you want one for Southeast King County, because there's enough interplay among the various jurisdictions out here to provide that. So we're flexible, and we'll listen to you guys about how you would like us to develop that, but we will develop the content for those pages. What we need from the local community is we need a place to put the physical wall mount of information related to transit services. You may have one already in your community. There may be a couple other locations where the public gathers that you think would be relevant sites where it would be helpful to put that information out there. So we would want help with identifying where those would be. And we would like the help of the local communities to leverage your existing communication channels with your residents to share information about our program and get the word out about the program and how people can use that. And again, we can provide the canned messages for that, but we don't have those listservs, those email lists, the newsletters that you have access to. And it just is going to be so much more relevant to the community when they hear that it's a community-sponsored and supported program. We think that is going to help with the service. We have found that is the case for our community van, or our commuter van program, that in that case our employers sponsor and leverage their communication channels to help promote the service and say it's a really good service that can help meet your needs. We want to partner with jurisdictions to provide a similar type engagement in the community. For the community vans, we will provide the vans for you. We will provide accessible vans, and if demand is high enough, we also have a whole fleet of retired commuter vans that we retire after 6-7 years that are in excellent shape that we could augment the fleet with. There's 7, 8, and 15 passenger vans in the retired fleet that we could also bring into the community. These would be vans that we would brand for the community van service. They would be branded with the local jurisdictions, presence on them as well as ours. At least that's our hope. It's how we have designed that in Duval, where we are kicking off a pilot program in January with this community van concept. As I mentioned earlier, we will handle the driver screening of the volunteer drivers for the program. What we need from the local communities, we need parking spaces to put the vans out here, and we have some criteria to make sure the vans, are put in a place that is not, it's going to be safe enough for them. But, as long as it's off-street parking overall and well-lit, we're probably fine to be able to pick any number of locations that work for you in the community. And we need your help, as I said, to help define what those group trips should be. We don't want to be in the position as King County to say what your priorities are. You know, even though we can scale the service, you know, we will probably start with a couple vans for you. We want you to be able to prioritize what trips are most important to you in the community, as long as they are group trips. So we want to work with you on what that is, and then our transportation coordinator will help to arrange and coordinate trips based on the priorities that are set by the community for those vans. The transportation coordinator, we will provide funding for the transportation coordinator. We will provide the training necessary to support services and programs that I've been talking about. And we will provide staff oversight for the transportation coordinator on the promotion and implementation of the products and services of Metro. What we are hoping to get from one of the jurisdictions out in the area is a group that can help advise, well, they can help with the payroll. We're going to have to hire in the local community, so we need someone who can process it through their payroll, even though we'll provide the funding for the position. We need, if you want them to have a physical presence where your residents can come and actually talk to them, we need a physical location where they can have a desk and a phone and have that conversation, although we will provide them a cell phone to be able to communicate as well and can provide a laptop. We do need a physical space to house this transportation coordinator in your community. We want someone who can work with that community coordinator and be kind of the local advisor if they have questions about how to reach out in the community, how they should navigate the environment and work with the council and work with the community to get these services up and running. And we would like some staff oversight and administrative level locally for the position related to the payroll and timekeeping. So that is kind of our vision at a high level of what the partnership roles would look like as it relates to this. Again, this is a new product. We are open to feedback and thoughts on how best to implement this. We have been working with Duval for the last year to develop a similar program in Duval. They are going to launch in January of next year based on this model that I just mentioned and discussed with you. So we will have some on-the-ground experience by the time we would roll this out in the Southeast King County area. So with that, any questions before I go on to the next step?
I have a quick question. Earlier, you talked about that the riders would pay. Now, who establishes the fee schedule for the use of the van?
Metro.
Okay.
It would be a standard Metro fare that riders would pay for the service. And that really is to help with sustainability long term. Right. We've implemented a number of programs over time, some for free, some for fee. And what we find is if we launch a service for free, the expectation is it remains free. And then when we have financial situations like we had with the Great Recession, council member Dunn referenced previously, those are the type of programs that are most vulnerable. So our hope is to build a model that's a sustainable model. And that fee also helps with the indicator of the acceptance in the community and the support in the community, et cetera. We do have $12 million for alternative services that has been budgeted by the council for the programs that we're implementing, but we don't know long-term what that budget will look like. That's what we have right now. They asked us to go out and do good things, put great services in the community, but you know, we want to be able to demonstrate viability of these programs.
Okay.
So that's the intent.
Thank you.
Okay. So the next steps for this, so this is a concept. Like I said, we've been discussing with the working group, and they felt it was viable enough that they wanted us to bring it to each of the city councils. If this sounds like something you would like us to move forward with, this is kind of the first step anyway for us to secure local commitment for this program. If you think it is something worth us exploring further, we will continue to work with your designees that you identify to implement a community van program in Southeast King County. We would need to identify how many vans, where the vans would be placed. We envisioned in the working group discussion that it would be kind of what they keep using the term Tri-City. I'm not sure if that's a term here, if it's just the working group among the Tri-Cities and maybe a shared model or, you know, one designated for each. But it sounds like there's a lot of Tri-City travel among the various cities that occurs. And so I thought this might be a really good way of getting that circulation that our bus routes just aren't supporting for you. We would need to identify places for the physical hubs where you would like that information in your community, develop partnerships agreement, of course, for the service. We need to identify, hire, and train a transportation coordinator to help promote this service in your community, launch the community hub in the physical locations as well as a web-based component for this, and start the recruitment of the volunteer drivers. Because without the volunteer drivers, we're not going to have a community van program, and we really do need to get those drivers on board sooner and later, and it will be an ongoing iterative process to recruit and retain volunteer drivers based on our experience with our other programs. And then once we have a cadre of drivers and some initial trips identified, we would bring the vans out and start promoting the trips locally in the community. And start promoting the service more widely using some of your outlets that you have to get communication out, as well as the ones that Metro has available to them. So that's my spiel. Any questions on that part of it?
Does anybody have any questions?
I just wanted to note that the community van program doesn't need to go through the council. It doesn't trigger the threshold of costing enough money to get their approval. The reason I say that is the service change that I described, that does need a council approval and has its own process, whereas this doesn't. So although it's all within the Southeast King County Alternative Services Program, we think they will have good synergy if they're all working together. They don't have the same political process, let's just say that. So I just wanted to make that clear.
So our timeline for implementing community van is going to be a combination of when we get the go-ahead, the nod from the local jurisdictions that you're interested in this, is something you want us to explore further and develop a work plan around, which you can then bring back the final proposal on that, and then just the time to bring a transportation coordinator on board and to start recruiting those volunteer drivers in the local community. This is new. The ball is doing their recruiting for drivers right now, so
so are you looking for a coordinator that's somebody from the local area?
We are flexible. We are we will hire and pay for the transportation coordinator. Mm-hmm. If you find one in the Tri-City area, I think that would be ideal because they have a better sense of what your needs are in the mm-hmm. community and know some of the local groups that they may want to talk to get some of that interest. If we cannot recruit one in the local area, we certainly are open to bringing someone in and training them up and having them
And is that the same thing with the van drivers? You'd like to get somebody local if possible?
We absolutely want our volunteer drivers to come from the local community. Absolutely.
Okay. I do have a question. Because we're used to the Tri-City, it's Maple Valley, Black Diamond, and Covington. Have you already spoken to those other two cities and their councils? Are they aware that this is going on, or is this really more geared towards us?
Nope. Essentially the community van concept was developed and envisioned as a Tri-City service.
It is, okay.
So you happen to be first on our list in terms of actually getting in front of you. But, you know, we've been working with staff of all three cities, and at the last working group meeting, you know, like Ann said, we had spent the last three meetings really kind of going over this concept, answering a lot of questions, giving the details. At the last meeting, the staff all kind of said, yeah, I think this is an option. I think it's now time to go engage with the council. So you're first on the list, but yeah, we'll be in front of Maple Valley and Covington County. councils.
Because we've all been talking about it. We have a yearly meeting where all the three councils get together, and we've been talking about it, but nothing has happened yet. So
yeah,
this
and
is good.
Andy's been working with the other two cities. So yeah. They've had several meetings. So
yeah, it was just a timing thing. I'm hoping January will be, you know, it's a budget season coming.
I thought we'd be first because we were higher in the alphabet. You know, we're B's. So
sure.
If that works.
You just have great staff. They were able to do this.
We think so.
Well, thank you so much for coming tonight and explaining your new plan, and hopefully we can get that going pretty soon.
Okay.
Great.
Super.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time tonight.
Yeah.
So I would accept a motion for the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Now, this is a time for our public comments. Persons wishing to address council regarding items of new business are encouraged to do so at this time. When recognized by the mayor, please come to the podium and clearly state your name and address. Please limit your contents to 3 minutes. If you desire a formal agenda placement, please contact the city clerk. Is there anybody wishing to address council? Judy.
Judith Carrier, 24305 Southeast Green Valley Road, Auburn, Washington. Council members, you may recall I testified at the first concurrency ordinance public hearing, appreciating the intent and the crafting of it at that time. I also ask that it be strengthened. As you know, the Citizens Technical Action Team, or TAT, has long been concerned with the potentially serious transportation issues this city could face in the future if it experiences large and potentially rapid growth. And they strongly support the need for new regulations dealing with transportation concurrency, like most of those contained in Ordinance 151061. Their team leader, Peter Rimbos, who couldn't be here tonight, testified at each of the two public hearings on the proposed concurrency ordinance held by the council and also submitted detailed written comments, some detailing with potentially serious risks to the city. At the close of the last public hearing on November 19th, Mr. Botcher requested the council vote on a revised ordinance. A council member asked if their team had substantial written comments, and Mr. Rimbos, on behalf of the Citizens Technical Action Team, replied yes. As a consequence, the council decided not to vote on the ordinance that evening. The TAT team took that to mean Mr. Botcher and Ms. Morris would go back and look at their written comments and re-revise the ordinance as deemed necessary and provide a revised version to the council for its review prior to its proposed adoption. Prior to tonight's meeting, the team again made a thorough review of the December 1st version of the ordinance you're being asked to vote on tonight, and found that none of their extensive written comments had been addressed, not even the typos they had found and pointed out. Mr. Rimbos then sent a letter so informing the mayor and council members, urging them to consider the content of the team's recommendations prior to voting on the concurrency ordinance. So I'm here tonight to urge you to heed the Citizens Act Technical Action Team's request to delay your vote on Ordinance 151061 until staff has reviewed the risk areas identified and rectified them to your satisfaction. The unchanged ordinance as being proposed tonight could incur unnecessary technical and regulatory and or financial risks in the future. Thank you for your consideration. And happy holidays to all of you and all the citizens in Black Diamond and Green Valley Road.
Thank you. There's somebody back there. I don't know your name, so.
You will see.
Hello, Mayor and Council members. My name is Leanne Garcia. My address is 25424 Cumberland Way in Black Diamond. I want to give you my perspective on Ordinance Number 15-1061 regarding transportation concurrency. I am just learning about this issue, but I know it's important, very important. This ordinance applies to the Yarrow Bay Master Plan development as well as to every other potential development in Black Diamond. If it is strong enough, this ordinance can protect the people of Black Diamond from traffic gridlock. On November 19, the Citizens Technical Action Team testified and gave you written comments about this ordinance. Basically, those comments were that the ordinance wasn't strong enough and had technical problems that could pose serious risks to the city and to us. On December 3rd, that Citizens Technical Action Team wrote to you again and told you that none of their comments had been included in the ordinance. It appears that they weren't even considered. I am here tonight to urge you to thoroughly consider these and other public comments on this issue. All of you are on record in support of better public participation. Now is the time to demonstrate that support. I urge you to hold this item until you receive a detailed written response from staff to each of the issues that were raised by the Citizens Technical Action Team and by others. I also urge you to open the public hearing after you receive those responses so that we, the people, can fully participate on this very important ordinance. And I thank you for your time and your consideration.
Thank you. Is there anybody else wishing to testify? Anybody wishing to make public comments? Seeing no one, I will close this public comment period. We have a public hearing on the proposed 2016 budget. May Miller.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Tonight is the second public hearing on the 2016 budget. This budget includes all the operating funds and all the capital funds for the year of 2016. We started this process back in August, and we've had numerous department, staff, and committee meetings with all the council. We've had two work studies, and we had a public hearing. Tonight is our second public hearing, and we're just here to take public input on the budget.
Thank you. Is there anybody wishing to respond to the public hearing on the budget? Seeing no one, I will close this public hearing. The next item on the agenda is Ordinance Number 15-1067, adopting the 2016 budget.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to mention that this budget is in balance for every fund. All the funds are supported with their own revenue. The ordinance is adopted at the fund level. There's copies available at City Hall or on the website. And I'm here to answer any questions. The budget does strengthen the fund balances, which was one of our goals of this year. Do you have any questions?
No, I have comments afterwards.
Oh, okay. Councilmember Morgan.
I do have a couple questions here. I noticed that in the transmittal, in the mayor's transmittal letter, there was an amount, $754,000, $115,000. I was wondering where that figure was, if it appears in the budget.
It's in the ending fund balance in the general fund.
Okay. And I'm also confused about the beginning balances and the ending balances. Where do you post? How are those posted?
The beginning balances are calculated during the year. We take all the how much money we started with, just like your checkbook, and then we estimate all the revenue we're going to have for the year and all the expenses and say this is where we're going to end the year. So first I did the August report and came forward and said, here's all the revenue I expect to get and the expenditures, and here's what I expect to end with. That then becomes the beginning balance for 2016. And each fund has its own separate beginning balance. Again, it's a calculation. We estimate all the individual revenues, add that in, estimate all the expenditures, and what's left is your ending balance. And the state is recommending that each year we increase that ending balance, because that's a measure of whether we're a fit government, whether we're trying to improve ourselves, or whether we're just pulling down that budget, which could cause you to have real financial problems in times of a recession.
Okay. Let's see here. It's on page 10 where I'm looking here. The ending balance for the general fund is less than the beginning balance on this page 10.
Page 12 is the actual general budget, not page 10.
Okay. It could be that in different revisions that it got in a different place.
Anyway, line 62 is the one that shows the 754,115.
On page 12.
So that's the ending. Okay.
That's 754. Number. The measure tries to look at what did you budget your ending was going to be last year compared to what it will be this year. Sometimes during the year you'll have an expenditure, say the audit, and if the audit didn't happen that year, you'll begin with more cash, because it's really carrying over from the previous year.
And I guess that always confuses me, because I want to see the actuals.
Well, and
I
we do
see actually what's actually there.
Well, we have a cash accounting system. There is no accrual, so you can't accrue something you haven't paid yet.
I understand that.
And the budget change we do, which is the next council item, adjusts all the beginning to the actual
to
cash
the
beginning.
Yeah, I kind of get that. I'm still having a hard time with that. Because it seems to me like we're planning to spend more than we're taking in, and I have a hard time.
Last year we budgeted to end with $645,080 on page 12.
Yeah.
And this year we're planning to end with $754,000. So some of those are carryover expenditures that we budgeted for last year but didn't really happen.
Didn't really happen.
Right. So we'll carry over.
So
and the cash carries
it,
over
so
and it covers
it is,
those.
So that's
yes.
what it is. Okay. All right. And services, each of these departments have services. What are services? I think I know. But.
Usually outside fees you pay for maintenance of items, maintenance of your streets, professional service if you have to have a consultant do some work, like in transportation engineer.
Okay.
Okay. And information services, that would be the IT part.
Yes.
I'm not looking at an individual. I'm looking at the general fund. Okay.
Well, there's no other discussion at this point.
I have one other question. Why are the estimated revenues and expenditures separately listed in the budget ordinance? Aren't they the same?
No. Revenue is money coming in to the city, like taxes and charges for services. Expenditures are what you pay out for the salaries for all the staff, for the supplies, and for the services. And they need to be separated.
Okay, and I'm still having problem with where the difference is and where you show the differences.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get there, but I'm still having a problem with that.
Okay, well, stop by. My office is open anytime.
Maybe.
I've got some.
Do you want to comment before I make a motion?
Probably so.
Okay.
So this isn't really a question. It's comments. Due to the turn of events, recent months, and after due consideration, I find myself in a position where I just cannot support a budget, and I will not support this budget unless there's full funding for the fire study. That is something that I don't think we can put off and wait. It has to be said that city accounting office has fought tooth and nail against any improvement in fire funding for some time. The ad hoc committee did a lot of review of finances, and contrary to the city accounting department, who would lead you to believe that the general fund is going to go over the cliff if we annex to the fire district or change fire funding substantially, that's just not true. As I said, the ad hoc committee did their homework on the finance piece as well. And one of the reasons that we're calling for the study was to validate the finances, who is correct, who isn't, so that the city knows what to plan, how to plan, and whether the annexation, if it occurs, whether it occurs next year or 2 or 3 or 4 years from now, we need to better understand what the true financial impact is going to be rather than argue about it and wonder about it for the next few years. So if we have if I'm going to support this budget, it's got to have full funding for the fire study in 2016.
Mayor?
Yes, Councilman.
And I appreciate what you're saying. But I think when we look, and since we talked, I've been thinking about this, because the process has to be, before we can talk annexation into Mountain View, we have to have a fire station. We have to have equipment that then can be manned by Mountain View, whether it's through a contract like now or eventually the annexation. We already have money set aside for that study to see what it's going to take for that capital equipment and the building and all of that. I think it's more important to get that going, because that's a bond issue to our citizens, because that's how we're going to have to fund that, whatever, $5 million worth of activity. Once we have that firehouse and equipment, then we can start working on annexing into Mountain View, because they don't want us, the way I understand it, until we fill our deficiencies that we currently have.
Well, it's not that they don't want us. If that's the whole point of the pre-annexation agreement, each party identifies the things that they want to have understood before going into it. That's one of the things that the fire district would want understood, is that, hey, we're not going to just annex you in and then build you a fire station. That's mm-hmm. your responsibility. So that can be taken care of in the pre-annexation agreement. I believe, even though technically they're separate issues, the the annexation and the fire station replacement. They're different, but they're the same. I mean, and the fire study, annexation study, it's going to have to include that as well, and how the whole picture turns out. And I think that we'd be remiss to not study that whole picture that includes both the annexation and the construction of the fire station. And if we're going to fund a study, we can have it include that. So I
think we've talked about this. We talked about it in the work study. There's been a new line item set up in the budget with $5,000, I think, for next year to start with. Yeah, it's not fully funded, but we also agreed as a city council that we would take a look at it again, like mid-year, and see how are we doing financially in the city, and if we've got some windfalls, then maybe we can do a budget change at that time, because we do budget changes, and now what, we're doing them twice a year?
Once.
Or once a year at the end. But we can revise that, and it's not that we don't support it, but we have to look at where's that money today? We've got some what-ifs out there. But right now, all we have is what we're budgeting for, and that's $5,000 for next year.
Well, I disagree.
Well, maybe I should just jump in here. You weren't at the last ad hoc committee meeting. Tammy and I went to that ad hoc committee meeting with the attorneys and with the fire department, and they all agreed that it was premature to do that study until we did a bond issue. And they said it would take us at least 2 years to set up for that bond issue, to educate the public and for it to go through and to try to build a fire station. They said it was premature to do that financial study now until we did the bond issue. So that the fire department and the attorney, that was what they said, the next step is the bond issue, not doing the financial study. Because if we do it now, we're wasting the money because the economy may change, and moving forward, we need to do it in the future after we do the bond issue.
Okay, well, that is true. I was out of town during the last ad hoc committee meeting. My position is that, one, our ending balance, we've been told has improved 18% this year. We will likely be getting additional windfall either the end of this year or the first of next year. And I guess everybody knows when it comes time to do a budget adjustment next year, I won't be here. So I guess I want to make my position at this point. So.
Well, and I can appreciate that, but you're still a citizen of the city of Black Diamond, and we expect you to come and remind us. We're not going to forget. The ad hoc committee is going to continue on. That will be one of – we know we have a deficiency. We know we need to take care of these things. This council, as it was, took the path that we were not going to kick the can down the road anymore. And I am hoping with the new council in January that we will continue – with that idea, that we take the issues on, we figure out what we're going to do, and then we go forth and have a plan that we march to. I think we need to look a little farther than next year. We need to be, just like we've done with the previous budgets. Once Mayor Benson got on the council, we went from a one-year look ahead to six-year plans. We need to be doing the same thing as far as the fire department is concerned. This isn't a 1 year next year or the year after plan. We have to be looking at a long-term plan and then budget appropriately to have the timing be right when we spend the money. And like the mayor said, there's no point in spending money now if we're going to have to do it again in another 2 or 3 years when it's actually time to do the annexation.
That's fine. I mean, we can disagree, but as far as, long-term, short-term, I just remind the council that this is something that I started bringing to the city's attention 8 years ago. So I've had a pretty long-term view.
I know, and I appreciate that. Well, I'm going to make a motion to approve Ordinance 15-1067, adopting the 2016 budget.
Do I hear a second?
Seriously? Point of order, I guess. I'd like to have some discussion here with this council that's now sitting here mute. We've had work studies. I understand Mr. Taylor's opinion about this. What's going on here?
We've had public hearings. We have had nobody object to the budget through the public hearing process, through the public process.
And you guys aren't talking.
We are required the first week in December, that's why we had a special meeting, to adopt the budget. If we don't adopt the budget, we're out of compliance.
I guess I would just say that, I mean, I've made, Janie and I have gone back and forth. That's what you do on council.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't second it because of the reasons I've stated that I just can't support it.
Well, you can second it. You don't have to vote for it.
Well, that's true. That's true. But I was just going to, what I was going to say is, as council members, we got to talk. I mean, what are you guys thinking? We need, are you going to support it? Not, and why?
Well, there's obviously still some question, some clarity questions, it seems. Councilmember Morgan brought a few up.
No, wait a minute. That's her understanding of the budget. She needs to have a sit-down with May in May's office to understand how that works. She sat through, and I'm sorry, I'm going to pick on you. We have had a lot of work studies. She's been on the council for 2 years. There's a basic understanding of what this budget is, and it balances. So what comes to us is a balanced budget. What we vote on is that balanced budget, whether it's the beginning fund balance and an ending fund balance. That's like your checkbook. At the beginning of the month, when you're reconciling your checkbook, you have a beginning balance from last month, and then you have an ending balance for this month. They don't match. Maybe they're going to be more. Maybe they're going to be less. It doesn't make it right or wrong. It's just different. It doesn't mean our budget is out of balance. It's not. It's a balanced budget. There is money to fund everything that's in this budget right now.
So maybe I don't understand. If nobody, if they don't vote on it, what happens?
They could, I guess, have it at the next council meeting.
It actually just has to be adopted before December 31st of 2015, Mayor. And you have to hold a meeting continuously until the it is adopted. I mean, I can go through the RCW, but we could adopt it at our next meeting on the 17th, and we would still be okay to do that.
I'll second it for the purpose of getting it on the table.
I still would like to know, with our other two council members, why they don't want to vote. I think we as citizens of this city deserve the respect of having an answer on why you don't want to vote tonight.
Okay.
To just sit there and be mute, I think, is not right.
Have you looked at the budget?
I have.
And do you have questions about the budget?
I have some questions, but nothing that I can definitively ask right this second. That's why I didn't second, because I figured that the time I have looked at it, obviously.
Well, you had the same opportunity as everybody else did to come to all the work sessions.
Yes, I did.
And meet with Ms.
Councilmember Morgan.
And I was actually at the Finance Committee meetings earlier today as well. What my actual problem is, I see this budget as opening us up to, once again, like we're going to do this year, approving a supplemental budget for additional money that came in. And I have a little bit of a problem that we're spending this supplemental money that was classified in our budget instead of putting it in some kind of savings. And I don't see where there's any real residual left over. And I just, that troubles me. It troubles me for the city of Black Diamond that we are not building any elasticity into our financial form. And that would be the real reason why I'm not going to vote for this budget.
One of the goals last year was that we do increase the fund balance, and we did increase it by $100,000, and that was the goal again this year, not to add extra staff or to use that money, but to actually increase that ending balance.
We increased it by $109,000.
Yeah, and out of a $13 million budget.
But that's just the general.
I'm sorry. It's not enough.
We don't have a sustainable budget.
Obviously.
The ending fund balance, if you go back to that one page you were referring to on page 10, we have $2,669,503 in ending fund balance, and that's projects, reserves, and purposely set aside ending balance. The state recommends at least 10% ending balance of your expenditures. Our policy that council has adopted recommends 10%. This, for the general fund, increases it to 18%. So it's 8% above what the state, and every year we've increased that, even though we've had cuts in some of our funding level from the support from Yarrow Bay. So I know that when we did the test, I just went to the state auditor's office, and they had us go through their test to see if we're improving our finances, like in the water fund, sewer. You're not supposed to make money or have fat fund balances, but you're supposed to have at least 2 months' worth of savings. So we purposely make sure that the water has their own fund balance of 2 months' worth of saving, and the sewer and the stormwater, and those rates have to be in place to cover those costs, because you can't take money from one fund and put it in another. And you can't just keep capital money. That money is just specified for the grants. So you can't set aside ending fund balance in grant projects. It has to 100% be used for the project.
So if you're not going to vote on it, I'm going to... We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
I got to say no.
Okay. I expect the two council people that don't have any specifics to meet with May and come up with specifics before our next meeting. I expect that, because this is an extremely good budget, and I have spent a lot of my background is in finance. We are ahead by $109,000 just in the general fund, not including the $2 million that we have in all of our fund balances. And you have had time to sit down and talk with Ms. Miller for months. We started this process in August.
I know.
And this needs to be finished. We need to approve a budget. So I expect you to do your research, do your homework, and find out what specific problems that you have with this budget, because this is a good budget. It is a good product. Everybody spent a lot of time on it, and I expect you to come up with specifics that you need to address, because this is not specific enough. This is not specific enough. Our fund balance has gone up by over $100,000 in the general fund, and we have $2.2 million in all our fund balances. And that's really good for a city that's been in trouble. And the only reason we've been able to do that is because we've had some building. We've gotten excise tax, we've gotten sales tax on the products that were used for building the houses. We were lucky. That's what we were. We were lucky this year that we have a fund balance. And I expect you guys to research this, because we need to adopt a budget. And this is a good budget. It's a good product. We spent a lot of time on it. We've done a lot of work studies. We've had public hearings. We have not heard any objection to it at all. And now we go to vote tonight. You haven't gone in and met with May. You haven't gone in and met with May. And now you have objections when we're supposed to be voting on it. That's totally unacceptable. And I expect that you do the research so we can vote on it at the next meeting. Do you understand that?
Oh, I've got it.
Okay.
I would also just like to say that I feel kind of bad about making my change at the last minute. As I considered it, and I just came to the conclusion that I had to take the position I did, and with the holidays and a number of us being in and out of town, I tried to give a heads up to different people, but I was only able to get a hold of like one other council person. So anyway, I apologize. I didn't mean to drop this on other people.
So the next item on the agenda is amending the 2015 budget ordinance number 15-1068. Ms. Miller.
This budget ordinance is allowed by the state RCWs. We can carry forward money that was budgeted for projects that hasn't been spent for grants. Like if we had a grant this year, we budget the whole amount. If we don't spend it, we can carry forward. These are monies from last year that were budgeted that we're carrying forward, and it's also carrying over the exact beginning fund balance in every fund. This is not just putting money throughout the budget for people to spend. This just covers our expenditures. By law, we have to have sufficient fund in there to cover every single fund, or else we will be written up in an audit, because by law, we have to have budgets in place that cover expenditures. When you adopt a budget that was put together in August, sometimes you don't know what the expenditures were. One was the planning budget change that council did last year by resolution, where you approved to add a part-time planner, and that was $95,000 budget change. It was adopted by your resolution, but there was no budget for that. We did receive the $95,000 additional revenue. I put the revenue in here, and that just covers that one expenditure that we had this year. That's an example of the expenditures. The biggest portion of this budget change is our grant for, it's about $1.4 million for Roberts Drive. That's a really wonderful grant that we got. We still have a lot of expenditures. We need to have that budget in place to spend those expenditures. We took this to the Finance Committee meeting, and they recommended approval. I ran this also by our city attorney, and she recommended approval.
I move to adopt Ordinance 15-1068 to amend the 2015 budget ordinance number 14-1038 to carry forward budgets from prior years and to add revenues to their expenditures in excess of estimates.
Second.
Is there any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Ordinance, next item on the agenda is ordinance number 15-1061, adopting concurrency regulations. Mr. Botcher.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Council. But we've spent some time on this ordinance. We've held a couple public hearings and a workshop. We did send the comments from the technical advisory team to Carol Morris, as well as Parametrics, and their senior traffic planner also evaluated that and felt that the ordinance in its current form addressed what we needed to address. Many of the concerns were more on the implementation or the technical side of things, not what was needed to frame the authority of the of what's needed in a concurrency ordinance. Be that as it may, there were some edits that minor that I would like to recommend. I think they will add to some clarity. and I'd like to review those. The first would be in the definition section under J, to change the word of in the second line to or. The second would be in section 14 of the ordinance, paragraph B1, adding the reference 11.11.12 at the end of that sentence. And finally, and this is not in your packet, in section 19 of the ordinance, under paragraph B, makes a reference to the options available to the applicant.
What page was that on?
That's on page 14. Section 19, denial letter. And so under section B of section 19, I'd recommend that we delete number one at the end. Now, the options that are available to the ordinance have already been listed in section 14, 1, 2, 3, and 4, one page back. But this would just add to the clarity there that all of those options are available, even though it's stated clearly in section 13. So just some basics there, that this is an ordinance that requires us to monitor and track the transportation impact of development here in the city. It sets up an administrative procedure for issuing capacity reservation certificates. If their level of service is not exceeded, and if it is exceeded, then a strategy to address that needs to be addressed within 6 years. And that could be a number of things. Typically, it's most common would be a mitigation project as a condition of approval. But there would be many different options, actually. And finally, it provides for annual reporting back to the council of what's the status of the level of service at the various intersections in the city. So with those minor edits, I would recommend approval, or would like to hear a direction from you.
Councilmember Edelman.
Well, I'm going to let everybody know that I had a conversation with Mr. Rimbos this afternoon on this subject, and I went back and double-checked his comments versus what's in the ordinance. Most of those corrections that Mr. Botcher just mentioned, we've now made those changes, and that will happen. Almost all of the comments that are in Mr. Rimbos's comments are administrative in nature, and I think we need to set the record straight once again on the functions of this government. This city council is legislative. We pass laws, we pass through an ordinance, or we pass resolutions, just like they do in Olympia. When it comes to the administrative side of getting the job done on a daily basis in the city, and directing the staff, that's the mayor's job. The mayor directs the staff goes and does. If we as a council of the whole want to direct the staff, we can do that. But as an individual, we do not have that authority at all. So most of these comments in here are saying, and we're also, I guess what I want to say is, an ordinance is a higher level document. It isn't the operating instruction on how you implement. That is up to staff to have the implementing instructions on how to go do whatever the ordinance says. And so by the time I got done talking with Peter about it, and it was a very congenial conversation, I mean, we've known each other for a long, long time, he was fine with that. He understood what was going on. The other point that I want to make is that this is not a one-time only. We cast this in concrete tonight, and we can never look at it again. And what I'm suggesting is that we pass this tonight because it's a good document. Let's work with it for a year. I'm sorry, you can shake your head all you want. It's a good document for now. Let's work with it for a year. Let's see where how we're doing. If we need to revise it, we amend this ordinance that comes back in front of the city council and we vote for the changes. I think because of all of the work that's gone into this, we need to pass this tonight. We can review it again next year after it's been in effect for a while and we understand how it's working or not working. If it's not working the way that it was intended, then we put in for a change.
So thank you for that. That's the first that I had heard that that someone had gone over point by point with Peter, and that was my main concern. I think it is, well, I think we all agree, this is vital to have a concurrency ordinance. I do want to make sure we get it right. If this, if we pass this, Seth, does this preempt or prevent any of the suggestions and the comments that have been submitted?
Well, the comments were primarily either on the technical side, which is the what we have professionals do, or the on the implementation side, administrative, or how they would apply to a particular applicant, which we shouldn't be addressing in an overall ordinance anyway.
So that's what I guess that's what I'm getting to, that, that the, this is an overarching document.
And we also have state law limitations puts us in a pretty tight box anyway of what we can do. And this ordinance is was written by Carol Morris, who is writing these ordinances for cities to use all over the state. I think it's a strong ordinance. It gives us the tools we need, one, be in compliance with state law, to provide you with the feedback and the information that you need for the update of the comprehensive plan at the end of the year, and gives us the tools to require development to either mitigate their impacts, or we have to stop them if they're not willing to mitigate those
impacts. So I guess the one thing I'm just wanting to make sure is we've heard a pretty strong message from the community that this is a sensitive issue and they want to make sure it's done right. So none of the comments that have been made, we are not going to prevent or negate any of those concerns or comments by passing this.
Because I don't think so. But if you wanted me to address every one of those, or I think it was 9 pages.
That
would be a huge effort. But I don't think it would change anything here. But
So those things, like you were saying, those are administrative things for the most part. And they basically live below the level of this ordinance. So I guess what I'm trying to get at is that even by passing this ordinance, we can still be sensitive to those administrative concerns.
Yes. Now, there were some comments where there was some wording recommendations where it seemed clearer to the technical advisory team to word it a different way. However, it didn't change the substance. And so if we wanted to make a edits so that it would marry happily with the TAT comments, there are changes that could be done. Substantively, it's going to work the same as I see it. I didn't see anything where we can, we're already implementing a pretty tight box anyway, so I don't see where it would serve much, but it might be clearer to the TAT if we, where we could use their language.
I'm not opposed to passing this, but that also might be a good show of good faith.
Except when I talked to Peter about this afternoon, he understood all of this.
Okay.
Well, he wasn't voicing huge objections. Now, do we agree 100% on everything? No. But at the level that we were talking today and having it, the overarching direction is basically what this does. Your implementation is beneath it. He was okay with that.
Okay.
Well, there's also the issue of you have me doing many things in service to the city, and there are many high-level things that are have large financial impacts to the city. Now, if you pull me away to polish one document to the highest level and change by to in as much as which, there's a point of diminishing return. How much time do you want to set me aside to do that? I'm willing to do it, but there is a cost.
And your point is well taken. That's true. I mean, we are short on staff and long on stuff to do, so I will certainly take that.
So I make a motion to adopt Ordinance 15-1061 establishing a transportation...
Councilmember Morgan?
I just want to tell you that I went through the changes line by line, word by word, that the TAT produced. I want to tell you for certain that there were things in there that I find with my 35-year history of being involved in the city of Black Diamond very necessary to have in the ordinance that we pass. They're specifically to protect the citizens financially and the road safety issues, and to be certain that the things are done in the way that the citizens expect them to be done. And I know that it makes it more, I can see perfectly that it makes it more tight.
Well,
I would suggest that we postpone this vote until we can get a clean copy in front of us. I have a real problem with voting on something that isn't clean as it's going into the law.
May I make another comment? This was drafted by an attorney that is authorized and through the state of Washington. She is the attorney for the Association of Washington Cities. She writes these documents all the time. And you're going to tell me that the TAT team knows more about the law than our lawyer? I don't buy that. I don't negate.
I just know that the citizens of Black Diamond that are represented and the region that are represented by the TAT team have a right to have their voice heard.
But Peter Rimbos didn't have a problem when I talked to him this afternoon. He understood when I talked to him.
Yes.
Mayor, one point. It would be helpful to me. And so you have some comments, but I didn't get them. In any form that you had edits that, and I, or from any of the other council on that this particular comment by the TAT team, I want incorporated. I didn't get any of those comments from council.
Councilmember Morgan,
that may well be true, but what I was looking at was the minutes that. TAT comments that were provided as a part of my minutes from the last meetings.
Just to get this on the floor, and we can still discuss it, I'm going to go ahead and make a motion to adopt Ordinance 15-1061, establishing a transportation concurrency ordinance, which established codes and policies to ensure that transportation facilities are planned, funded, and constructed concurrent with the development according to state law, with changing the word of to or in section 111103J and inserting the reference number 111012 to the end of the sentence in section 111014, B as in boy, 1, and delete the number 1 at the end of 111019, B as in boy, that sentence.
I second.
Do we have any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Mayor breaks the tie.
I approve. I say aye.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is the resolution number 15-1053, confirming Mayor's Planning Commission appointment for Ronald Green. And I met with Barbara Kincaid, our Community Development Director, Janie Edelman, and Craig Goodwin during these interviews, and we were all unanimous on Ronald Green and Dave Amber. Ronald Green is new to the city, hasn't lived here very long, but he had done all of his research and knew just about everything there was to know about the city. I was very pleased with his interview. Dave Amber is a business owner in the city, has been around for a very long time, and has participated for years in council meetings, planning commission, and is a very active member of the Black Diamond Community Center, and he's very interested in being on the Planning Commission. So anyway, so the first resolution is resolution number 15-1053 for Ronald Green.
I make a motion to adopt resolution number 15-1053, authorizing the Mayor's Planning Commission appointment of Ronald Green to the Black Diamond Planning Commission, position number 2.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Carol?
Yes.
I would like to make a comment for the record. This process that you've used this time to appoint somebody to the Planning Commission, it doesn't seem to me to be very very much anything that I've seen before. Any information about the individual and their qualifications is not available in this packet. The choice is the mayor's.
And no, that's not true. That is not true.
It's the mayor's prerogative.
No, it's not. This was, I'm sorry, you guys are putting me around the bed. This was a committee of the mayor, two city council people, and the community development director.
And it's the same process that we have used.
It's been the same process that we've used in the 3 years I've been on the council.
And before, the same process that we've used.
This is a lot better than the former process where the mayor just made an appointment and the council only got to approve or deny. And that was an arm wrestle several years ago. And we came up with this process where there was actually council members and the planner, city planner and whatnot, that came into the whole equation. And this is a much better process for vetting the person than just...
Well, let me make another comment, too. We've got, in the next 6 months, 5 openings on the Planning Commission. These are the first two because the terms are expiring. Because Mr. Weber is now on the council, we have to fill your slot. We also have one person whose term is expiring at the end of the month, and we need to fill that slot. We have some more coming up when Ms. Pepper comes on the council in January. So there's a systematic way of doing this. We have interviewed four people. And now we have a new resignation that just came through. So we're going to have to open it up again. But there is a process in place. Now, I will grant that it would have been nice maybe to have had the resumes in the packet. So be it. Maybe we can do that next time. But this man came into this meeting with us. He knew what was going on. He's only lived here a short period of time. He wants to become involved. And when you only have a limited amount of people that are applying for these positions.
Anyway, thanks for your comment.
I'd just make one comment. I appreciate the process. 2 years ago is when, like you're referring to, we did have Gary, Mr. Davis and I did have to come and interview in front of the council. So it is kind of a different process than the mayor, a couple council, and another person.
Well, it's different than when you did it. But
yeah.
The process that we used before was the same process we used this time. But then we didn't approve the appointments until Dave Gordon was in office because we wanted him to make the selection. And that's why it was done differently last time. That's not the normal process.
Well, and the other thing, to keep in mind, too, though, is that because we have so many vacancies, we have people that have applied for all of the vacancies that are coming up. So it's not like when you were chosen, we interviewed people because we had two positions, but we also had interviews to go with them because there were multiple people.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is resolution number 15-1054, confirming mayor's planning commission appointment to Dave Amber. Okay.
I'll make a motion to adopt resolution 15-1054, authorizing the mayor's planning commission appointment of Dave Amber to position number 6.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The next item on the agenda is resolution number 15-1055, adopting addendum to Yakima Jail Agreement. Chief Kiblinger.
Good evening, Mayor Council. What you have in front of you is our yearly addendum with Yakima County Department of Corrections. This is where we house all of our long-term prisoners. There's no cost increase for 2016. It's just our yearly addendum.
This is
any questions?
Something that we talk about in Public Safety Committee meeting, and like Chief said, this is something that has to be renewed periodically. This is the best deal we've got right now for long-term housing. So I move to adopt resolution number 15-1055, authorizing the mayor to execute an addendum to our contract with Yakima County Department of Corrections for jail services for 2016.
I'll second it.
Is there any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Next item on the agenda is Resolution number 15-1056, adopting professional services agreement with HBL. Ms. Kincaid.
Thank you, Mayor, Council members. So, Agenda Bill 15092, Resolution 151056, would authorize the mayor to execute a contract for the year 2016 to use the professional planning services of AHBL. This is not the new, late in 2013, we entered into a contract and have been renewing that contract with AHBL in 2014 and 2015. So really this is a request to continue that arrangement that we have. What the contract does is it authorizes up to $120,000 for the year for about 24 hours a week to have a planning consultant come in. We have a planner in-house 2 days a week to be able to provide planning review, permit review, and help with the questions that people have, folks have when they come into the planning department or phone calls. As Ms. Miller alluded to in her discussion with the budget amendment, $95,000 of that $120,000 is supported by permit fees, and it's in your current budget. The $25,000 up to that $120,000 cap is actually if we need to use part of that time and expense it to the comp plan update. The comp plan update has a budget, line item budget, and a portion of that we may be able to use AHBL to help us with our mapping and some miscellaneous things to get that comp plan done for our time schedule. So this is nothing new. The Finance Committee met earlier on this today and approved it. And it's just staff is asking that you approve Resolution 151056, which would authorize the mayor to sign that contract for services. Do you have any questions?
Councilmember Morgan.
I think it's because of the descriptive words are so much the same. I think I get what the difference is between the building services that are in the ILA mm-hmm. with Covington and Maple Valley, and what these planners do.
It is the ILA is separate, and that is for building official plan review and inspections. This contract, and that is with Covington and Maple Valley. Mm-hmm. This contract is for permitting review, for example. Alex Campbell is the gentleman that we've had in-house now since I started, and he does the shoreline review of plans or maybe variances or the things that the planners do, and that's different from what the building folks.
The building codes.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the question.
So my question is, since we've had a contract with them, has our usage of their services increased, decreased over the last couple of years, or?
It's remained, let me back up. Before you hired me, we had 2 days a week. I believe that was the end of 2013 and part of 2014. And then when you lost your community development director, that contract was amended and increased to a 3 day a week, so up to what is in the contract now, up to 24 hours.
Okay. And so in the last, since you came on board, aren't we, how has it changed?
It's about the same.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
And in fact, I anticipate in 2016 that once we get that comp plan done, this $20,000 is just to try to help to make sure that we can get the work done on the comp plan, and then I anticipate the planning services would be reduced. And again, the majority of the time is spent on what we call the current planning function, and they are all supported by permit fees.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that was my next question. What did you see happening next year?
I make a motion to adopt resolution number 15-1056, authorizing the mayor to execute a professional services contract with AHBL Incorporated for part-time planning services for 2016.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Now, at this time, because of the budget, I think that I would like to schedule a special meeting on the 10th as a work study to go over the budget in detail, and until we come to a consensus, we will be here all night. So I expect to have a meeting on the 10th, special meeting. We'll go over the budget as a work study.
It's Thursday, right?
6 o'clock.
Thursday?
Yeah. Okay, now it's time for department reports.
May I ask a question?
Yeah.
So on this special meeting, we will then have action to follow, so we'll do the budget and pass it.
We're going to have a meeting and to just present all the different angles until we come to a consensus, and then we will vote the following
week. On the following week?
Yes.
Okay.
Unless you decide you want to vote, but that's not going to be on the agenda. No.
Okay. Great.
So, Mayor's report, we had a management committee meeting, finance committee meeting, management meeting, and another planning commission interview. During this time, is there a council report from Councilmember Morgan?
I'll submit a report later in writing. I haven't had a chance to get through it.
Councilmember Edelman?
I have nothing to report.
Councilmember Weber?
Went to the Association of Washington Cities webinar in Covington Saturday all day.
Cool. How was it?
It was all right. It was interesting.
Good.
Make sure my moral compass is set.
Councilmember Taylor.
I love the new artwork.
It's big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Other than that, I have no
idea. Why don't you ask Chief Kiblinger to give you
background?
From? You probably should try to do some kind of a news release on that.
Yeah.
That would be a really good idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've got a comment. There's a wonderful feast that should be right over the top of the
bed.
I've watched three people just about scrape the Saturday. Really, I've been just
okay.
But it's really a
benefit that big.
Otherwise,
so this is the second public comment period. Persons wishing to address the City Council regarding items of new business are encouraged to do so at this time. Please come forward and state your name and address. Is there anyone wishing to address Council? Gary.
I'll need less than 30 seconds. Extra calendars have shown up. Whoever wants it.
Wow, thank you. Anybody else? Robin.
He didn't give his address, though.
So. Oh, well, we're okay with that.
It's Robin Taylor, 32110 Botts Drive, Black Diamond. Just a clarification on Dave Amber's Planning Commission. I know council members need to be a citizen of the city, live within
or
the city.
Or a business owner.
Or a business owner?
Yes.
For city council?
Yeah. No, or for planning commission.
Just for planning. Okay, because I didn't know if they, because I know he always gives Lake 12 as his address.
Yes, he doesn't live in Black Diamond, but he is a business owner of Black Diamond. He has a business license.
All right, that's what I wanted to clarify. Thank you.
Okay. Is there anybody else wishing to make public comments? Seeing no one, I will close this public comment session.
I make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Meeting is adjourned.